What's up, heretics? It's the Religion of Speed podcast. I am Matt Overstreet.
And I'm Chris Huffman.
And we are back again to talk about all the cool shit going on in the automotive world as well, as far as it pertains to us grassroots racers and poor boys.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe one day we'll be able to talk about Lamborghinis and Ferraris.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I'm ever going to be that. Even if I get the money and I own a Lambo,
yeah,
I don't think I'll ever see Religion of Speed.
I mean, there's a very limited market.
Right.
For people talking about owning Lamborghinis.
And I get it. For whatever reason, like the YouTube guys, like they buy a Lamborghini and they talk about owning a Lamborghini and they get lots of views.
Right.
Because it's a bunch of fucking teenagers or prepubescent boys.
Right.
Can't say that word. you know, that are just dreaming of, oh, I want to own a Lamborghini someday. So they rack up the views for that stuff.
Right.
But I don't want to do that. That's not me.
That's just clickbait.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'd love to own a Lambo one day if I could.
Yeah.
They're crazy cars, but...
But there's only a handful of people in the world that you could really talk to about owning a Lamborghini.
Right.
Like Lamborghini owner problems.
Ugh. I don't want to talk to people that own Lamborghinis either. Like, that just sounds like... That's, like I said, that's not who I am. I'm the guy who's going to go, like, I'd take a Lamborghini to, like, a car meet for, like, Toyotas.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, that's amazing. And I'd be like, is that an 86? Oh, my God. You know?
It was like that Gallardo we saw pull in at the Nissan meet.
Yeah.
Followed by that Subaru K-Van.
Yeah.
And the K-Van got all the attention, including from the Lamborghini owner.
Yeah.
He was taking pictures while he was driving in.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like... I don't know. That's who I am. I like the weird stuff. I like the grassroots stuff.
I mean, that K-Van was infinitely more interesting.
Yeah. Like, right. Once you've seen one Lambo, you've kind of seen them all.
Right, right.
Like, they're crazy, expensive, loud, fast cars.
Mid-engine V10, all-wheel drive.
I'll take the rear-engine three-cylinder van that the roof pops up on. You're like, what is this?
I love the fact that the front passenger seat swivels all the way around so that you have a conversation area with the people in the back.
Right, yeah. You can just, like, chill in your van and, like, hang out.
Imagine if they'd chosen to do that with, like, a Dodge Grand Caravan.
So, there are some, like, I think you could get, like, the big conversion vans.
Yeah, the ones that where the top actually pops up a little bit.
Yeah, where it kind of bubbles up a little bit. You know, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, the big plushy conversion vans with like the wood trim and big poofy seats, or was that more of a Midwestern thing?
I didn't see as many, but I know what you're talking about.
You know, the full size van.
Yeah.
And had the captain's chairs. I'm pretty sure a lot of those swiveled around.
Like the RV style captain's chairs.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah. But nothing the size of this K-Van.
No, nothing the size of this desk that we're at currently.
Wow, I think this desk might actually be bigger than that.
It might be. It might be bigger, more square footage.
Yeah, definitely bigger than the cappuccino. Definitely taller.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm sad that I don't fit in cappuccinos, but that's, you know, whatever.
Just get a pair of goggles and drive with the top off.
Yeah, just don't roll.
Yeah. Just don't roll. And if you do, duck.
Yeah. Because that could be what I'm thinking of the first thing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So there's a bit of news and stuff to talk about, some cool things happening with the automotive world. First, I want to talk about something that doesn't happen very often, is a new 200 treadwear race tire from Continental, of all places.
I'm excited to see what these things can do. This is a really aggressive looking tire. It looks like it has just enough rain channels to make it street legal.
Right. It's funny because it looks a lot like the old RE71R, which looks a lot like the RT666, which looks a lot like the, the Star Spec, whatever they are, Dunlops. They all just, like, this is the tread pattern now. Like,
yeah.
This is the one. They kind of figured it out. There's subtle changes, but the big center rib and the little side channels, that's what they're all going to. What makes me excited about this tire is, yes, it's branded Continental, but Continental owns Hoosier.
Oh, okay.
So this is pretty much, from what I've been reading, a street legal Hoosier tire.
Wow. And yeah, they make some of the tires for NASCAR, right?
I mean, they make all sorts of race tires. They're just a race tire company. That's all they do.
So I'd be interested to see how long this rubber holds up.
Well, Continental is saying this tire is more aimed at budget endurance racing than it is for, like, autocross or track attack.
Okay.
So they're trying, so the grip levels might not be as high as like the RT660 that I have on my car,
yeah,
the Falcon, but these ones might actually wear a lot better. You know, if you're making a tire for endurance racing, you want a tire that lasts.
Yeah, you don't want to have to be changing the tires as often because every pit is losing time.
And that, and most of those, you know, budget endurance teams, the ones that are doing like American Endurance Racing or that Lucky Dog Racing we talked about
a few times
ago. You know, those people aren't the type of people that are like, well, I'm going to put, you know, I'm going to have six sets of tires for this race. No, you have one set of tires for the race, maybe a couple spares.
Yeah, you don't have another complete set.
Exactly.
So, yeah, something like that. That sounds really appealing. And to be honest, if you're running autocross on a budget,
yeah,
and you can get two seasons out of these tires,
right,
that's a lot, even if your lap times are a little slower.
Right. Or if you just want like the stickiest freaking street tire.
Yeah.
That isn't going to completely wear out in a summer.
Yeah.
Because I've had that. So the Falcons are actually wearing really well.
How long have you had this set?
I went all last season with those, and they're like half worn right now.
Oh, cool.
And that's track time and street driving.
And you just pull them off in the winter.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like right now, you said you still have your winter tires, but the street ones are about to go back on it.
Yeah, pretty much once I know all the shit weather is cleared.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be switching all the time. I've done that before where it's like, ah, shit, it's raining. So I pull my car into the shop and I swap out tires. And then the next day I put the good tires back on. And then 3 days later I put the snow back on. I'm like, no, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait till the shit weather's passed and then I'll put the race tires back on.
Which is difficult considering that it's the end of April and we had snow last week.
Yeah, a lot of snow.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a little bit of snow either.
Yeah, it was enough snow to close, you know. Businesses don't really close in Colorado, but their revenues go down.
Yeah, a little bit. And the thing is, with this style tread pattern, like, yes, it does have some rain channels, but man, you get hit any sort of standing water and these types of tires just are not happy.
Wow, so you're slipping and sliding.
Yeah. The tire I had before that was the Yokohama Advan AO52.
How'd you feel about those?
Really grippy. They wore out crazy fast.
Did they make it a whole season?
They had one season and it was done.
Okay.
They were toast. I mean, I have a picture somewhere, but I mean, it was a slick when I was done with them.
Wow.
That was after grid life. Yeah. They were completely done. So they have a lot of grip, but they cost a lot of money and they wear out really fast. So I don't think I'm going with those anymore.
Yeah. That's like you said, we're all about the budget racing.
Right. And there is no, I didn't see any pricing range for these Continentals yet, but they are called the Extreme Contact Force, which, man, Continental's names are just always terrible.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad tire names in the tire world.
True.
But this one, it almost feels like they named it in a different language and then translated it poorly.
Well, I'm pretty sure Continental is German.
Is it? So
I think so.
So maybe Extreme Contact Force sounds better in German.
Right? Let's see. Continental is German. Germany. Yep.
So okay.
That makes sense, especially if you work on BMWs at all.
Yeah.
And you learn what they call parts and shit.
Yeah. You're
like, what does this mean? It's a direct translation from German. That's why. You know? Unfortunately, I'm not going to be running these tires on the Fiesta even if I want to because there's no 16-inch sizes.
Really?
16-inch race tires are getting harder and harder to come by.
I guess everything's on 17s now.
Yeah, you're either running 15s and on a Miata or old Civic, or you're running 17s.
Yeah, so there are a 15-inch
Yeah, there's model. A couple. You got your 205/50 and 225/45. That's your typical 15-inch wheel sizes.
And then it goes all the way up after 17.
Yeah, we got a 19 in there too. 345/30/19.
So that's like what the back tire of a Corvette.
Yeah. Yeah. So this specifically says Corvette fitment on there. I guess 3 series, old E30s use 15-inch wheels too. I guess that makes sense. Hmm. But yeah, I have a feeling this is going to be a little bit more costly just because Continentals generally are a little more costly.
But they make a quality tire.
Yeah. So, and hey, if anybody's willing to throw in more race tires into this world, I am super happy with that. Bless you. Because for a while there, we had the poor selection. Like, I'd say like 5-ish years ago, the selection of race tires was not that good.
There just weren't a lot of these street legal, you know, street legal slicks.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, cheater tires.
Exactly.
But yeah, they're specifically branding this to World Racing League, American Endurance Racing, Lemons, Champ Car, that kind of stuff.
I mean, I like that they put Lemons in there.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, like that, because, you know, it's like you said, Continental is not a cheap brand.
Right.
But when you're saying, hey, you can use this on your Lemons car, it's like, oh, wow, they're really trying to market this to people who, you know, maybe don't usually buy Continentals.
Right.
Because they're really expensive, people who are, you know, the Kumo and Nexen crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the older Falcons are still really popular in Lemons, the RT615Ks.
Are they a little bit cheaper than the 660s?
They're quite cheap at this point, because it's an old tire at this point. I think that's like a 10-year-old tire almost.
Oh, wow.
Or at least a 10-year-old tread pattern.
Do they have pretty good grip then?
Yeah, they're okay.
Just not by modern standards.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're outclassed by modern tires a lot, but they're really cheap. And if you're running a Lemons team, cheap is good.
Cheap is good.
So...
yeah.
And it is just funny to see a press release with the 24 Hours of Lemons logo on it.
It really is.
It's like all these really official looking logos and then a lemon.
a lemon that's slightly askew.
Yeah.
Like every one of these logos looks so official.
Right.
And then that looks like, was that just a logo that they just kind of threw in there? Like
somebody just came up with that on a whim?
Yeah, was this the website designer? Like it doesn't fit. But I'm really glad that they did that because, you know, it's not just because the people in driving SCCA have serious money to put into their cars.
Yeah.
Lemons is, you know, they limit it. You're not supposed to put money into it.
I mean, tires are unlimited in budget.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. The tires, brakes, cage, safety equipment, stuff like that.
Okay.
You have unlimited budget for that. But most of those teams they're running on a budget.
Yeah.
You don't make a Lemons car and then spend $10,000 in tires and brakes. Like, you just don't do that.
Yeah.
It'd be fucking useless. And plus, I don't know if they still have this rule. When Lemons first started, you could buy a competitor's car after the race for $500.
Yeah. Like, if you made them an offer, they had to say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to keep everything fair. So that way people weren't doing that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Weren't putting that kind of development time into the cars.
Yeah.
You know? Because that's not what they want out of that race series.
Yeah, it's not about the cars. It's about the driving.
Yeah. It's about going out, having fun, racing in freaking 24 hours.
Yeah.
Getting that seat time.
Yeah. Because, I mean, 24 hours on track will forever change how well you drive.
Oh, yeah. I need to do it at some point. They do a race out of High Plains. They do two races, actually, this year.
I want to get out to High Plains. Last time we were at PPIR, they were showing me some videos of laps at High Plains, and it looks like a really fun track.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got some good, like, undulating elevation change. Nothing too crazy, but
yeah,
looks like a little bit. And then, yeah, it just looks like a nice track in general.
And a lot of high-speed corners.
Yeah. I went out yesterday and met my buddy Brian out at IMI.
Yeah.
Because he was racing go-karts.
Oh, cool.
And he's been trying to get me out there for a long time, and I've just been crazy busy with shit.
Well, I know you've wanted to visit IMI for quite a while.
Yeah. So I was like, well, I got a few hours to kill. I'm going to head up there, just meet him, bullshit, and just check out the track.
Yeah.
And I think I love IMI. Like, watching like Noriyaru's videos,
yeah,
you know, where he's at the Japanese tracks,
and yeah,
it's just like low key. There's it feels like a Japanese track. It doesn't feel like, you know, you go to High Plains and it's just it. I feel like I haven't been there, but from what I could tell, it's like higher class, if you will.
Ah,
you know, it's a nice track.
And yeah,
it's a private track technically, so like, you know, it just there's money there. You know,
yeah.
PPIR is kind of like a medium in between. They take themselves seriously. They got a very tight ship running.
Yes.
You know? And IMI is just like, hey, we have a racetrack. Do you want to use it?
Anybody want to drive?
Yeah.
Sign this liability release.
Right.
Is there a tech inspection? Well, do you not trust yourself? Is your car running?
Right.
All right, fine. Go out there.
Yeah, get out there.
Yeah.
There's a house across the street from the track there. I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah, I thought about buying
it. That big-ass garage.
Yeah.
I was like, that'd be perfect.
Yes.
I want that place.
Somebody else has had that thought, and that's why it's there.
Right? Just like, yeah, well, you know, I made some adjustments on the coilovers today. You can go over and do a few laps.
How cool would that be?
Oh, my God.
If you just live down the street. Like, I've actually looked at houses in Thornton just for that reason.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's another reason I'd want to live up there.
Yeah, not really.
But if it's right next to a track.
Right.
You know, it's like those condos they built right at Willow Springs. Mm-hmm. And it's got a garage that literally drives onto the track.
Yep.
Like, and you could just, and Willow Springs doesn't even host events because the weather down there is too brutal.
Oh, really?
So there's no real official race series that run down there.
Huh.
You can just rent out the track and go. And there's,
that'd be awesome.
There's a skid, or it's not a wet weather skid pad, but there's like a skid area. I think they call it the upper deck.
Okay, yeah.
And
I think I've heard of that.
And yeah, it's just an area where if you want to go do donuts and slide around, you can do that.
That'd be awesome. Just have that available to you.
Yeah.
There was a house for sale a few years ago down in Texas that was on some racetrack down there.
Yeah.
Same thing. It was a shop with a like apartment above it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you could drive right onto the track. It was only like $500,000.
Only half a million.
I mean, yeah. You consider you...
Yeah.
Own a house with a full shop, like large shop.
Like it's got lifts in it and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Lifts and everything on a track.
That does seem pretty reasonable.
Consider what you would get for that in Denver here.
Yeah, for $500,000 in Denver, you're not even going to get off-street parking.
That's true. But if you're interested in the Continental Extreme Contact Force, I don't know if there's any more news, but it's launching June 1st, so I'm sure we're going to get some pricing here pretty soon. And yeah, interesting to see if anybody starts running those. And if you do, let us know. Give us a nice review. Or Continental, hook us up with a set so that we can actually review them.
I will happily burn through a set of these Continental.
Not drifting. We're not drifting them, okay? We need to learn how much they grip. I guess the drifting, though, that would be a good endurance test.
Yeah, see how long the tread actually holds up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Moving on from that, this is something I know, Chris, you really wanted to talk about because you're in love with this car.
Oh, I was so excited when I saw this. Daiyoshi Hara built a rear-wheel drive AE86, or it's, you know, obviously it's always rear-wheel drive.
Yeah.
But he put a Civic Type R motor into it, the K20C1.
Yep.
Which, you know, we've been talking about that crate motor basically every podcast.
Yeah, pretty much.
Point.
Like, I was kind of concerned, or not concerned, but I was figuring that was going to be a side note. Like, hey, Honda does this, and we're never going to talk about it again.
Yeah.
But no, it's popping up everywhere.
People are really using these swaps, and Dai's been working on this car. They said they started working on this in 2016.
Wow.
So it's been a long time coming, and, you know, he's Dai Yoshihara, so he had access to a Honda crate motor before anyone else did.
Right.
And I just think it's amazing that somebody's going to run this in a rear-wheel drive setup. To my knowledge, this is the first K20C1 running outside of a front-wheel drive setup.
Yeah, I believe so. I think somebody else was working on one for SEMA this year, but maybe that was the Dai's car that I was hearing a rumor of, because they didn't say who it was. They just said somebody was working on a rear-wheel drive, so maybe that was this car.
And if he's been working on it since 2016 and kept it under wraps, I didn't know about it until I saw that Hoonigan video a couple weeks ago. But I'm excited about this because I have a 240 and I would love to put one of these in my car.
Is the K-Series just becoming the new LS?
I think it's the four-cylinder LS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely.
It's crazy. This engine's winding up in everything.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a great motor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the C1 isn't necessarily ubiquitous, but the K20 and the K24, you can get those everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, K24s, that's a Accord, CRX, or CRVs, you know. Just, yeah, anything,
it was
really.
In the TSX. And
yep.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see this. And I wonder how many of the existing rear-wheel drive conversion K-Series parts can be applied to the C1.
Yeah, I'd be curious. Like, does this require all custom stuff? Or can you pretty much go to K-Miata and get yourself a bell housing adapter? And it'll work.
How cool would that be?
Right?
And it looks like, so Dai ran an S2000 transmission, which, okay. You know, that's an incredible transmission. I've never heard anyone say anything negative really about, you know, using one of those. They're really forgiving.
From what I hear, they shift well, like every Honda, and they also seem to take power really well. Because I've seen some S2000s putting down some power, and I don't hear them, you know, going through transmissions.
Yeah, the engine will blow before the transmission messes up.
Unlike Miatas, which go through transmissions under stock power sometimes. But
people do some crazy stuff to Miatas.
Yeah, it's true. But this car is gorgeous, too. I mean, outside of even the Turn 14 livery, which I like the colors and stuff on it. The, what would they call that? Like N2? Yeah, N2 style fender flares and stuff on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
That's been my favorite AE86 look for a long time. I just, like, it looks so much better than regular over fenders, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, those bolted on ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when it's molded in, it just, it looks classier.
Well, I guess, I mean, these are bolted on, but...
You can't, can you see the rivets?
Yeah, you can, but, you know, it just, the N2 flares are, like, whole quarter panels and whole fenders almost, instead of just, like, you know, the little, initial D, like, little fender flares, you know?
Little over fenders, yeah.
Yeah, no, this thing, it's gorgeous. I mean, it's pretty much my dream 86 at this point.
Yeah, I can't think of an 86 I'd want more than this.
Right.
I mean, Honda just builds a great motor. Like, when it comes to four-cylinder engines, I've got to love that picture of Dai.
Yeah, it's a good picture. I wanted to zoom in on the wheels. So those look like some custom three-piece wheels of some kind.
I think they said that those were BBS.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
And he actually managed to run the factory cross member. They welded different mounts and ran the factory cross member for the 4AGE.
That is surprising.
And it worked. What I was curious about was the oil pan. It looked like they did have to fab an oil pan for it, but they didn't have to make any little cuts or concessions.
Yeah.
So there was enough room in this engine bay to make this work. And the AE86 doesn't have a huge bay.
No.
So that means that this swap is doable in a lot of other vehicles.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody comes out with a kit here soon.
I think we'll see them swapped into Miatas pretty frequently.
Yeah. Like you're saying, if it's the same mounts and the same bell housing adapters,
yeah,
as long as the oil pan's not considerably different, then they've already figured out how to do it. So
yeah, and I am genuinely excited to see what this means. I know we've been saying that about this motor for a long time.
Right.
We were really excited to see it go in an Accord wagon, but
yeah, this is a little bit better.
I forgot all about the wagon when I saw this car.
I don't know. I would take this.
Over the wagon?
I would take this over the wagon.
It's less practical.
But I would feel bad.
Just because you're like, I could have gotten groceries in this.
Yeah, wagons are cool. I don't know what to tell you.
This thing's a hatchback.
Yeah, it's fine. I can deliver tofu in this.
There you go. Yeah.
I like the Falcon Azina's RT660 sticker on the front here.
Oh, that's cool.
So he's running the 660s as well.
And this is a great picture of what Willow Springs Raceway looks like. It's fucking beautiful out there.
Well, I mean, all the auto journalists always go out to Willow Springs.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you said, they don't really run big events there. So you can ride the track pretty easily.
Yeah, so you can do the streets of Willow, and they've got multiple tracks and courses. Mm-hmm. So even if there is something else going on, you can get out there and use it.
Yeah, I gotta say, Willow Springs, like, I've never driven it in real life, but in video game form, in sim form, it's actually kind of a hard track to get the flow of at times.
It seems like some of the turns are off camber.
Yeah, the back section, I could never get down.
I haven't had the pleasure of driving on the streets of Willow.
Yeah.
I have drifted around on their upper deck area.
Oh, nice.
And that's you know, it's basically just a parking lot.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that they did that.
Right.
There's a lot of tracks that don't.
Sorry, I just saw this. Oh, the website's going to be dumb now. This dash pod.
Ooh.
The dash setup he's got in this thing. I'm a sucker for a really good gutted car.
And yeah, this thing was gutted very clean.
Yeah.
Like, it looks really nice on the inside.
Oh, yeah, look at that. The switch gear here in the center console. The handbrake, which looks like... So, instead of having the master cylinder for your hydraulic handbrake right attached to the lever, it looks like there's actually a pull, like... So you got your lever arm hooked up to like a cantilever thing that goes to the back somewhere.
So Siki makes a kit that lets you do that.
Okay.
It relocates the master cylinder to the rear of the car. So that it gives you more room up in the passenger compartment, which I thought that was a really neat kit. GK Tech actually just came out with a stealth hydraulic handbrake kit that looks like it's designed to fit inside your factory console.
Huh, okay.
Which I think that's awesome, because I've wanted to do that to my 240 for a while, but I don't want to completely destroy my interior.
Yeah.
And I think that that would be something I'd be interested in doing. And the GK Tech kit actually comes with a set with Wilwood calipers.
Oh, nice.
An extra mounting plate. so that you
have, actually run dual calipers,
yeah,
instead of the weird like inline hydraulic stuff.
Yeah, yeah, where you're using the same brake for your hand brake and foot brake.
Yeah,
and you have to tap into your hard lines, which I just wouldn't trust that seal, especially on an older car.
I don't know. I just wouldn't. I just can't see that not causing weird braking issues.
Yeah, I feel like you'd have a weird pedal feel.
Yeah,
and every time you tried to get on it. And it just looks really cool to have two brake calipers on the back of your car. Yeah,
and it's cool to have a hydraulic handbrake.
Yes.
I want a hydraulic handbrake on, like, my Fiesta.
Just to mess around?
Yeah, just to mess around.
Yeah.
Because actually, the parking handbrake is pretty weak.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I can not lock those tires up on dry pavement.
Oh, that's a shame. Is it the drum-style handbrake?
No, it's actually a ratchet style, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, interesting.
I would have to check that, actually. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's a ratchet style, though.
Because on the 240, when I got it with the factory brakes, the handbrake physically actuates that rear 240 caliper.
Yep.
But when I did the Z32 conversion, I had to put a drum assembly in.
Okay.
Which significantly weakens the lockup.
Yeah. Yeah, those little drums, they're not meant for stopping. They're meant for holding.
Yeah.
It's a different
thing. It's a
different
parking thing. Brake, not yeah. an emergency brake.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's so ever since I've done the Z32 swap, I've been shopping for hydraulic handbrakes.
Yeah.
Just because I miss that rock solid lockup.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys will only do the Z32 front conversion just so they can keep that in
just
the back.
Just because of that. Well, that's just why you need a dual caliper setup.
Exactly.
So
it's just an excuse to buy a second set of calipers.
Right. Just an excuse to spend more money.
Yeah.
And, speaking of spending money, this is ridiculous.
This is insane.
40,000 kilometer. There we go. 98 Impreza 22B STI.
Which is insanely rare in this color combination.
I mean, this is the Subaru, by the way.
Yeah,
this is the Subaru.
This is the car that Takumi's dad bought in initial
D. Yeah, this is Bunta's car, yeah. I mean, you know, it has other reasons for being popular, but it's also Bunta's car.
Yeah.
This one sold on Bring a Trailer for $312,555.
And, you know, it's crazy. 90s Japanese sports cars have been over-speculated.
Yes.
But this is extravagant and insane. That being said, I'm jealous of the person who bought it.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love this car. Like, this is, like I said, the Subaru for me. Like, that's the one I want. Like, yeah. all other Subarus are kind of like a bit of a, you know, okay, I'll take it. But
right.
If I'm going to have a Subaru, I want a two-door.
A two-door STI.
Yeah, exactly.
Which only exists in this form.
Yeah. And so, apparently, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to be paying $300,000.
If you want it in blue with gold.
But, like we were talking about earlier, like, yes, this isn't going to become a Lamborghini channel, but I'd buy a Lamborghini.
You could.
I'm sorry. Like, I love my Japanese cars. I'm not going to spend that kind of money on this car.
I could buy a Ferrari 458 Italia, twin turbo it, and convert it to a manual.
Yeah.
For what I would spend on this.
I'm not gonna spend that kind of money on a car that needs head gaskets.
You know it probably does.
It does.
Even though it's only got 40,000, that means it spent too much time sitting.
Right?
Yeah.
Also, look at this picture. Falcon RT660s.
Oh, wow.
Everybody's running these goddamn tires.
You know, two or three people recommended that to me at PPIR.
Yeah.
The Falcon RT660s, because they saw me slipping and sliding on my all seasons.
Well, it's funny because I picked up those tires because they had just got announced. And I was like, well, that's a good damn price on those tires. I'll give them a shot. And come to find out, that was the one. I rolled the dice and I got the right tire, I guess. That's the go-to at this point.
I'm going to need to get another set of summers for the BRZ soon. So I'm going to have my choices cut out for me.
Yeah. Oh, man, this car is gorgeous. Don't get me wrong.
It really is. It's super clean. It's iconic. Absolutely. But $350,000.
I mean, yeah, if you look at the pictures on Bring a Trailer's site, like, this thing is flawless. This is completely just fresh out of the showroom, flawless.
And it may be the cleanest one in the world at this point.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, there's kind of a tax for that.
What I want to know is how much the person who sold it paid for it.
Right.
How much money did they make on this?
Yeah, I'd be curious. They had to make a lot.
Yeah. I'm betting that they at least doubled their money, maybe more.
They even have the paint thickness on there. So this is a special tool a lot of detailers use.
Yeah.
That will measure the thickness of your paint.
I didn't even know that was a thing. Does it use lasers?
I think it uses sound. I'm not exactly sure. I think it's an ultrasound type thing.
Wow.
I cannot be for sure though. I've never used one. But I just know they use them a lot. So that way they know if you're buffing a car, if the paint's too thin, you don't want to buff it out because you'll just buff the paint off the car.
That's fair.
And a lot of really old cars have that problem. So, God, that is crazy. To go through and show pictures of the paint thickness on all the body panels.
I mean, this might be the most thorough online ad for a car.
Right? That is crazy. And just every panel, every single one. Oh, man, that hood's only 2.5.
Only 2.5. You can't buff that like you can the side panels.
Yep, no, we're... I'm knocking $100,000 off that car. Oh... Yeah, look at the intercooler water sprayers.
This thing came with factory intercooler water sprayers?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know what? You could Dodge Neon SRT4s. You could get a factory kit to do that as well.
Really?
Yeah.
That car was ahead of its time.
That car was really cool.
And it caught a lot of shit because it was a neon.
Yeah.
And the base neon was garbage.
And the base neon, for people that know, the Neon RTs and ACRs, were autocross monsters when they came out.
Really?
They were dominating SCCA.
We're talking about the NA versions.
Yeah.
Wow.
They were dominating SCCA when they came out.
Wow.
ACR versions. Yeah.
That's insane. And NA Neon. Because the boosted ones were 0 to 60 in the 4s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is why they were dominating SCCA autocross. Not, road racing.
Gotcha.
The NA ones.
Yeah, because...
It is a good chassis at the end of the day.
Yeah. So they just, adding that much power to it,
right.
was just the next logical step.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a buddy who had one in college and I still would take one of those cars, and I would pay a lot less than a $312,000 Subaru.
But, more power to the person who is able to sell it for that price.
And more power to the guy that could afford it. Cause I'm sure this is his dream car too. And he basically bought a brand new version of his dream car.
That's true.
How often can you do that, right?
He now has the best example of one of these online. Problem is, this is now the standard for a clean version of one of these.
Yeah.
Now that this standard has been set, basically these have been priced out of any sort of availability for anyone with more humble finances. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Nobody stateside, unless you're rich, is getting a 22B now.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, they, made 400 of them?
Now, is that just in this color combo, though?
I don't know. I guess it says 400 produced for the Japanese market. So, I'm sure there were another probably 400 for the Euro market, because that was the other place they sold it. And I was wrong. Those were not RT660s. Those are Dunlop Derezza Z2s. See what I mean about this dang tread pattern is the same for all these damn tires.
They all look the same. I mean, somebody figured it out and then everybody copies it. That's the nature of the industry.
Right, exactly. I wish somebody would copy this. Can we go back to 90s designs?
I think it would be amazing if Subaru built a two-door WRX or STI right now.
Yeah.
Which I know that's what everybody was hoping the BRZ would be, but the BRZ is entirely its own thing.
Yeah, it's a completely different thing.
I hear people complain about, I wish they would have made it an all-wheel drive. It's that would have ruined the car.
Yeah.
It's with that power plant making it all-wheel drive, it would have been so slow.
Yeah, it would have been... I mean, yeah, they could have made a turbocharged all-wheel drive thing. They could have, but that's not what they were aiming for. They weren't targeting a Subaru. It just happened to be that Subaru and Toyota teamed up for this.
Yes.
They were targeting an A6.
Yeah.
They wanted to do that. And I think they nailed that perfectly.
I think they did a great job with it. It's a shame they're getting so expensive now.
Right. Everything's getting expensive, man.
It's true. But we were looking at last podcast, the Miata undercuts the new version by, $4,000?
Yeah.
Which, the Miata's faster.
Right? Yeah, so. It is. But... I don't know. I'd have to drive them back to back to see which one I'd prefer, honestly.
It'd be a tough call. If I got the Miata, it'd have to be the RF.
Yeah, you think so?
Which would add about half a second to the 0 to 60.
Yeah. Yeah, you get all that weight up top, man. You can't do that.
But it's gorgeous.
It is.
It makes it so practical,
I don't know if it makes it any more practical. I think you might lose trunk space.
Do you lose trunk space?
Well, that roof's got to go somewhere, man.
That's true. I didn't think about that. Just the idea. I have a ragtop Miata, and just watching that top stand up to elements
yeah.
is depressing.
Oh, yeah. I had to replace a top in a Miata, too, and that's not a job you want to do.
Yeah, and if you live anywhere where there's teenage vandals, they might be kind enough to put a screwdriver through it for
you. That's why I had to.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
They ripped open my top, they stole my radio, and they stole my season one DVD of Invader Zim.
They stole your Invader Zim?
Yeah.
What heartless assholes.
I know, right? That's motherfuckers. Yeah. So that means I have to buy that back now. And to do that, I guess we're going to have to sell some ads, which we might not actually have ads this time around, but maybe eventually we'll have ads.
Yeah.
And this will be the space where they go.
Sponsors, Matt needs a new copy of season one of Invader Zim.
Yes. So let's take a break and have some room for those sponsors.
Sounds good.
What's up, everybody? We are back from the ad break. I mean, maybe there was an ad.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, I haven't done the ad read yet.
Let's hope somebody's done an ad.
Actually, I did get a message on Instagram from a company that's called like Hairy Balls or something like that. I think they make like men's shaving product and they're trying to be like,
you know,
funny.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're looking for podcasters. And I'm like, I don't know about that.
You don't want to be synonymous with hairy balls?
I don't know if I want to be synonymous with hairy balls. Like, I don't need that in my life.
I wonder if it's the same company that does the, it seems like they hired the same guy to plug the soap and that beard trimmer and those aluminum sunglasses. I think it's the same spokesperson for all of them. It's that blonde, long-haired, bearded guy.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
The ad for I think Squatch is the brand of the soap.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I vaguely know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I just noticed, I'm like, is this guy plugging everything?
I mean, you know?
Yeah, he found his niche.
Yeah, make your living, man.
Yeah.
You know what would be really funny? If I'm giving this company shit after doing an ad read for them. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I'll put that in there.
Maybe they will be our sponsor.
So let's get back into the news because there's still more news. And you know, here at Religion of Speed, we're all about budget racing.
Yeah.
And we are gonna be doing some stuff with karting here in the future. I was telling you in the off break there that I went and saw my buddy Brian and we're doing some karting stuff.
Yeah.
But I was saying that like, that's probably the cheapest way to get into motorsports, but there is a cheaper way. Sim racing.
Yeah, not racing at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. So, some old people are still, like, very kind of poo-poo about sim racing.
Yeah.
And I will admit, it's not a one-to-one.
Right.
But if you're a good sim racer, chances are you can transition into real cars pretty easily.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we were talking about the theory versus the application.
Right.
And if you're sim racing, you're exercising your knowledge of theory.
Yes.
And you can't discount that.
No.
That will make you faster.
Yeah, you're still getting, you know, virtual seat time.
Yeah.
That's better than no seat time.
Oh, I've learned a lot about driving just from Forza 4 with an Xbox controller.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, on the YouTube channel right now, I'm going back through Gran Turismo 2 a little bit because that's the game that taught me about driving.
Yeah.
About, like, performance driving and how it works. You know, I remember in high school joking, there was like a kind of like almost like a, not really roundabout, but like an oval road in front of the high school.
Yeah.
Rectangle, I guess you would call it. But I would always joke with my friends that I'm taking the Gran Turismo line outside, inside, outside. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, that's how ingrained that, like, that kind of stuff is in my brain.
Yeah. And it gets ingrained by drilling it into your brain over and over again, which you can do on a sim rig for much, much cheaper than doing it in real life.
And to add to that cheapness, Fanatec is bringing out a new steering wheel base. And this is exciting because it is a direct drive base. So your Logitechs are gear driven. They have some gear slop in them.
You don't, okay.
It's hard to notice a lot of times, but if you're going straight, there's actually a little bit of gear slop. So you kind of have to chase the wheel a little bit.
Yeah.
The one I have, the Thrustmaster, is a belt drive, which is better. But then there's direct drive, which this is basically just a giant drill motor. Like, you can see it.
It's that's what it looks like.
Giant drill motor. The direct driveness literally means it's just an electric motor with an output, basically.
Wow.
And direct drive sim racing wheels have been like the hot shit for a while now. But the cheapest one you can get was like $1,000.
That's really pricey for a sim rig.
Very pricey.
Yeah.
I mean, some people spend a lot more money than that on sim rigs, but, you know, we're not those people.
Right.
The crazy part about this Fanatec one is it is part of their CSL line, which is their cheap one. So this is a $350 wheelbase.
So can you use a real steering wheel with this?
You could, yeah. They make adapters for that.
That is cool.
But this does work with all the Fanatec wheels as well, which includes like their F1 wheel or their GT wheel. They're, you know, they make all sorts of different types of wheels that you can attach to this. Or, yeah, I've seen people use adapters to just put like an NRG wheel, like a deep dish drifting wheel on it.
Which, I mean, how cool would that be? You pull the wheel off your car when you park it and you walk inside and hook it onto your sim rig.
That would be awesome. And well, time to go get some more practice.
Yeah. And one thing they never tell you about with a detachable steering wheel, if you park your car outside, you get to keep your steering wheel inside. So it's either... it's room temperature instead of either being really hot or really cold.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
So when you get in the car, when it's really cold, you know, it's a little jarring because your shift knob is still icy cold.
Right.
But your steering wheel, where your hands spend most of their time, is just a comfortable temperature.
Oh, man. I remember back when I had my Miata, I swapped it out for a weighted metal shift knob.
Oh, man. Those are horrible when it gets hot.
Yeah. With it, when you leave the top down, you come out from the store and it's been baking in the sun for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. I literally had gloves just so that way I could shift my car.
I knew a guy in high school who had a 99 Civic Si, the one with the B16,
mm-hmm.
and he had an aluminum shift knob and he had to keep a sock in the car.
Yeah.
Because on a really cold day, you couldn't touch it, and on a really hot day, you couldn't touch it.
Yeah, there were times like when it was really cold, like I'd drive my Miata almost year round as long as the roads were kind of clear. Like I'd scrape the windows and then my gloves would get a little wet.
Yeah.
And then I'd go in and grab the shifter and my glove would stick to the shifter.
Just freeze straight to it.
Freeze. It's like, oh man. Yeah. So, but yeah, steering wheel. I never thought about that. Keep it climate controlled.
Yeah, it's great. Now my car sits in the garage now, but I used to park it on the street, and Tennessee heat is next level.
Yeah,
so it was great to just walk out of an air conditioned building and have my steering wheel nice and cool and get in the car.
Yeah, never thought about that. That's just another reason to get a detachable steering wheel.
Yep, just don't do that thing that those kids did on YouTube and hang it out while you're going down the highway.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or if you're gonna stage that, at least like lock some channel locks.
Yeah,
there are some vice grips onto there.
Yeah, keep it straight.
Yeah. But yeah, this is it's kind of annoying to me that Fanatec just did this because I just bought that Thrustmaster wheel, but I paid $300 for the wheel base, steering wheel, and pedal setup. This is $350 for just the wheelbase.
Yeah.
So it is still more costly, but if you It gives a bit more mid-range because it was kind of like either you get the Thrustmaster I have or the Logitech, which is a little bit cheaper.
Yeah.
Or you go to like $800 wheels.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't really this in-between.
Which at $800, you're getting into the point of the cheapest car on Craigslist.
Yeah, you really are.
Which is always something a gearhead's going to consider.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, granted, you can drive a lot more cars, quote-unquote drive, with a sim rig. But yeah, $350 for a direct drive base is... it really is a game changer. That's what all the headlines are kind of saying, and it for a reason. Like when you drop a price of something from $1,000 to $350,
you single handedly push the price down of an entire market segment,
right?
Which is, you know, that is when consumers win,
right? This really reminds me of in the tool world when everything went to lithium ion.
Oh yeah,
how for a while like there were lithium ion like tools. But they were really expensive. And then I think it was Makita might have been the first ones that were like, hey, we got this down. It's cheap. And everybody was like, yeah, no, we're all switching to electric now.
Yeah.
You know? So I have a feeling in given another 5 years, everybody's going to be direct drive.
And that's cool. I mean, that means every sim rig's going to be better.
Yep.
And it's all going to be more affordable thanks to the one brand that was willing to push the price down.
Yep, exactly.
And that everybody wins when that happens. That's literally watching progress take place.
That is the good side of capitalism.
There we go.
That's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah. The bad side being the CVT transmissions.
Yeah. The bad side being the manipulation of the Chinese workers that probably make these. But we're not going to get into that.
Yep. We're not a politics podcast.
No, we're not. Although I think we could make a politics podcast.
We could. We could do an economics and a politics podcast. Yeah. Maybe one day we should.
Maybe. But then again, I think if people knew what we were thinking all the time, they might not want to listen to us talk about cars.
That's true.
They're maybe like, these guys, oh my God, they got some crazy ideas.
It's like, don't support those ideas.
Right? Yeah, no, this thing can offer up to 8 newton meters of force.
Wow.
Which is a lot.
Yeah, that's enough to...
It'll rip it out.
Yeah, that's enough to hurt your wrists.
Yeah. That's the thing that I've heard with direct drive wheels. Like, you have to be careful because if you hit a wall in the game,
yeah,
you have to do the same thing you do in a racing game. You have to let go, or a racing car rather.
Yeah,
you have to let go of the wheel, or else you could hurt your wrists or your thumbs.
Yeah, especially if you are using a real steering wheel with metal spokes.
Right.
I mean, that could hurt.
Yeah. So you know that this isn't a kid's toy at this point. You know, like. People still think of driving games sometimes. I feel like maybe that's an older generation thing of like racing games are for kids and stuff. But no, you can actually hurt yourself on this. Like, this is for training.
Yeah. Once the danger is real, it's for adults.
Yes. that's kind of a real thing.
Yeah. Once you remove the foam, once it becomes de-nerfed.
Yep.
Yeah. That is interesting. Yeah. It's exciting to see that. And, you know, big boys need toys too.
Exactly. So
big boys and girls.
Yeah. Anybody.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so maybe eventually I'll upgrade to, you know, a direct drive setup. I'm, like I said, kind of sad I didn't, because I know the precision is a lot better. You get a lot better force feedback.
Just,
you don't have that slack of belts or gears or anything like that. But sometime in the future, I still got to get my sim rig done anyways.
How embarrassing would it be though, if you come in with like a broken finger and you're like, yeah, I did this playing video games.
Right? Like, what kind of games are you playing? For right now, this is going to be just for PC. I guess it will work with Xbox consoles with a compatible wheel, and they are working on a PlayStation version.
Nice.
So
this is going to proliferate to all the major platforms.
Yep. And I found this interesting. So it's $350 in US dollars, in Euro pounds, and $599 in Australian dollars.
Wow. I didn't know the exchange rate to Australian dollars was that
different. I wonder if the exchange rate's that different, or I know things just cost more in Australia.
You got to ship everything in.
Yeah, but so, I mean, this is being made in China.
That's true.
They're closer.
That's true. If anything, ours should be more expensive.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know how this works. I feel bad for Australian people. Like, everything's more expensive there.
Yeah, their cars are more expensive, but hey, they got an RB30 Oldsmobile.
True.
We never got that.
They also just got Skylines as well.
Yeah. They just
have them.
And they can just vacation in Thailand like, you know, us going to the Caribbean.
True. Yeah, you know what? Australians, you get your... Well, I don't know. They also have to deal with a lot of poisonous animals.
Did you see the videos of the mice that overran Australia?
No.
Dude, it's terrifying.
Like a plague?
Yeah, it looks like a plague. Like they ran into the grocery stores. There's videos of farmers walking around and like at night shining flashlights and the whole ground is just moving. And like they literally had to move everything off the bottom shelf of grocery stores. And they're constantly sweeping up dead mice that have been poisoned.
Why do people live in Australia? Oh my, you couldn't give me enough skylines to deal with the shit they deal with there.
They also have the utes though. Those
True.
Are pretty cool.
True. Utes, plagues.
Yeah.
It's a hard balance.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Mad Max vehicles because you have the Mad Max realities.
Yes, true. That's why that takes place in Australia. That was actually a documentary. I don't know that. It was just some dude out in the outback trying to get gas.
Yeah, this guy would just went for gas. And he filmed the whole thing, and that's how we got the Mad Max trilogy.
Well, speaking of sim racing and how some people don't take it seriously, there is a group that is taking sim racing seriously, and that's the Olympics.
This is really cool. I mean, the fact that any video game is considered an Olympic sport.
Right.
It really speaks to, you know, it's like you were saying earlier, people think video games are childish, but
right.
But that's just because they didn't grow up with them.
Right.
People our age grew up playing video games.
Right.
And it's not like we're stopping just because we got to a certain age and we decided, oh, I'm too old for that now.
No.
We don't have as much time as we would like for video games.
Right.
But it's not like it's a thing that's only relegated to a certain age group.
Yeah, and I feel like the people that do complain about, like, ooh, esports aren't sports.
Yeah.
Don't play games. Because they don't know the difference between... Like, let's take a shooter, like a Call of Duty or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't play those games because I just get wrecked.
Oh, constantly. Yeah. Like, yeah, I play zombies, but if I get in multiplayer, these kids,
yeah,
they're so fast.
Yeah, the skill level is so high.
Yeah, it's there's ridiculous. A steep learning curve on this.
Like, when I was in college, I tried to get into some competitive StarCraft 2.
Oh, that's a real tough nugget.
Yeah, especially because I'm not Korean. All the best players are Korean. I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, like the amount of skill that goes into that, that's kind of what changed my mind on like esports, I guess.
Yeah.
I was like, no, this is a sport. It doesn't take physical capabilities a lot of times.
Yeah, but I mean, hand-eye coordination
and just
the physical capability.
The
you know?
Mental side of it is insane.
You have to be able to think and react so fast.
Yeah.
And they've shown that video game players are actually better at multitasking.
Makes sense.
Because they say that you can't, like, the theory of multitasking is, they say that it's impossible, and depending on how you look at it, you can say that that's true.
Yeah.
Because you can't physically focus on more than one thing at once.
You just switch between them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's a cost. There's a focus tax, basically, when you switch from one topic to the next.
Okay.
And they found that people who play a lot of video games have reduced that cost from switching to one topic to another.
Hmm.
So, you know, while no one can focus on multiple things at once, you can accomplish more tasks at once if you play video games.
I wonder, so people blame TV and video games for, and like phones and all this kind of stuff these days for what seems to be the rise of attention deficit disorders.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's not so much like we're getting ADHD, is that, you know, because we're doing these things, we're just learning to multitask better, and it's just switching, like, it is kind of like ADHD, but it's not really a disorder. It's just a training thing.
It's a new world.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And you know, when you're analyzing that using the metrics of the old world, it appears that there's a disorder.
Yeah. That's a good point.
But you're measuring it with an antiquated system.
Yeah.
You know, people have changed and we've evolved to be beings that function better in this digital world.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely changes how you approach things and how you do everything. Like, back when my dad was going through school and doing all his math courses to become a machinist.
Yeah.
You know, he had to memorize a lot of things.
Yeah.
He had to memorize the conversion. He can still do the conversion from metric to standard.
That's impressive.
It takes him a minute.
Yeah.
But I can't do it at all. So, like, I'm not going to knock him for that.
Yeah.
But the difference is you don't really need to know how to do that these days.
No. No.
You just need to know how to use the tools to do it for you.
Yes.
You know, it's a different skill.
Yeah, and they're saying that, you know, memorization is less important now because data is easily accessible.
Yeah, but our generation is better at finding and accessing the right data than the older generation is.
Right, because even if we're not as good at remembering it.
Right.
Because we don't use that energy to remember. And they say that forgetting and knowing and being able to forget certain things to make room in your memory is just as valuable as being able to remember the right things.
Huh. Well, I know I forget people's names after like a week. So does that count?
Yeah, there you go. You're a genius.
Yeah.
That's what it is this entire time.
Yeah. Anyways, getting back to the Olympics. Yeah, well, they are doing sim racing in the Olympics, and not just any sim racing. They're doing Gran Turismo Sport, which is kind of surprising and kind of not, because listen, there are better sim racers out there in Gran Turismo Sport.
Yeah.
Gran Turismo Sport is still slightly more arcadey, but it is the name, right?
And Gran Turismo is ubiquitous.
Exactly.
I know that this is going to make a lot of Forza people angry, but Gran Turismo is more proliferated. The PlayStation is more accessible globally than the Xbox is.
The Gran Turismo is the granddaddy.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the one that started this whole craze.
Yeah.
Yes, there was, like, Virtual Racer. for like the Sega back in the day. So technically there have been sim racers longer than Gran Turismo, but that's the one that made it popular.
Yeah, well, and that one actually made it a virtual experience that equated to the real thing.
Yeah,
as best they could do.
I tell you what, even going back and playing Gran Turismo 2, the physics aren't anywhere as good as modern sim racers or even modern Forza or anything like that. But they still make sense. Front-wheel drive cars still handle like front-wheel drive cars. Rear-wheel drive cars handle like rear-wheel drive cars.
Yeah.
Almost to like extremes.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how they did that. Like Forza 2 was similar, like where the reality was easier than the game.
Oh, I'm having a hell of a time. I'm trying to get the all golden A-spec license.
Yeah.
And all the rear-wheel drive stuff I'm having a hell of a time with. Because you just tap the brakes just a little bit, and it's like, oh, drift?
Yeah,
I'll drift.
Yeah. And you just give it a little too much throttle in the corner, and oh, yep, you're sideways.
Yeah,
there you go.
Exactly. I'm like, damn it, Jesus.
Yeah. In reality, you've got a little bit more room to play.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like the modern games have kind of caught up to that. But it is amazing that, like, you know, and that's why I grew up playing. So I kind of understood that stuff at a weird intuitive level.
Yeah.
Before I ever got in a car.
Before you even thought about it.
Right.
Like you said, it was intuitive. It wasn't even, you know, it wasn't something that you were consciously, you know, oh, I'm training.
Yeah. No.
It was a thing, you know, like that's what we do now as adults. But as kids, we just did it and felt it.
Mm-hmm.
And it became, you know, innate.
Yep. Thinking of all the time I spent trying to get all gold on the license test as a kid.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever gotten more. I've done all gold in the B license and the A license. And then there's International C, International B, International A. I don't think I've ever gotten those top three. So that's my goal right now.
Yeah.
With going back and playing this game is like, all right, I'm an adult. I know how to drive.
Right.
I know how racing works. I can do this.
I'm going to apply my world experience to dominate this child's game.
It's not working. It's so hard.
If it makes it feel better, when I go back and play Grand Theft Auto San Andreas and do their license tests,
oh god,
I'm worse than I was when I was
a kid. That was even new Grand Theft Auto games do not have good driving physics.
No, they've gotten better through the years, but the original Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, it was they were pretty arcadey physics.
Yeah, I just remember like taking corners at like a bajillion miles an hour, like 90 degrees. It's like, whoop, all right.
And if you use the handbrake, it's just a magic button.
Yeah, magic turning button.
Yeah.
But Gran Turismo Sport actually isn't the only game joining the Olympics this year, their virtual series. They're actually doing a baseball game, which is eBaseball Powerful Pro Baseball 2020 from Konami, which is a...
Sounds like a Japanese direct translation.
Right. They're doing cycling with this thing called Zwift, which actually looks cool. I looked this up. It's like it's a massively multiplayer online game that they do for stationary bikes.
Oh.
Yeah.
How do you interact on a massive scale with a stationary bike?
I didn't get in that far. But I think it's like you and your friends can go for like bike rides and shit together.
That sounds really cool.
Right? And they do, like, the drafting and stuff they do and, like, pro cycling and whatnot.
Yeah, you can, like, ride the Tour de France.
Yeah.
That actually sounds pretty neat, like, especially if you're into cycling.
Yeah, I mean, because my thing with, like, a stationary bike or a treadmill is I just get so bored.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I'm still staring at this wall.
Yep. I've been running. I ran 2 miles, and I'm looking at the same thing.
Oh, I couldn't get 2 miles. I could barely run a mile.
If you go down to altitude, I bet you could.
Yeah, I know I could, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, but, ugh. Yeah, Gran Turismo for their Motorsports 1, which is FIA certified. This race is going to be FIA certified.
Because the FIA needs to regulate more things.
Exactly. Yeah, because they need more money.
Yeah.
They're going to do some rowing game, nobody knows what, and a sailing game.
That sounds really cool.
But you know what's funny? As I looked up these games, so Zwift looks kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Gran Turismo, we know, is Gran Turismo. At least it's a competent racing game.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't look up this eBaseball thing, but it's from Konami. And anybody that follows video games know Konami has just been on a fucking downhill.
Oh, have they?
Oh, God. Ever since they fired the guy who made Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
they've been focusing on like gambling stuff, like slot machines and pachinko machines in Japan.
Yeah.
And their video games have just gone so downhill.
They probably realized they were making a lot more money on the slot machines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, there's a Silent Hill pachinko machine. You want to take two things that you should not mash up. It's the dark, gritty horror of Silent Hill.
Yeah.
And a bunch of steel balls flying around as a gambling mechanic.
Yeah, and aren't there supposed to be like happy noises and everything?
There are, yeah.
They don't use Silent Hill sound effects for it?
No, it's like these happy noises, and I've watched videos of this being played. And then like Pyramid Head comes out and does a thing, and it's like, what is this? What is going on? Non-video game people are going to be questioning what the fuck Pyramid Head is right now.
But the juxtaposition there.
Right.
That's insane.
It's a horror video game. Imagine like, what's a really famous American horror thing that we can go about? Like,
like Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, slot machine. Hey, what? These things don't get these. They're not the same thing.
I don't even know what Texas Chainsaw Massacre animation they would run if you won.
Right?
It's like nobody won in that movie.
Right?
A few people survived, but I wouldn't have called them winners.
Yeah, they definitely didn't win.
Yeah.
Anyways, the point was, I don't think this baseball game is any good, and the sailing game is like a mobile game.
Oh.
Yeah.
And that's going to be an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm like, what? Like... It almost brings Gran Turismo down being in this group.
Yeah, this is the most legitimate game in this lineup.
Which is insane.
And I understand that the Olympics is about, you know, fellowship, so they couldn't do stuff like shooters or Mortal Kombat.
Right.
But it does...
Yeah, they couldn't do the legit esports.
Right, yeah. You know, the stuff that most gamers are actually going to spend their time playing.
Right.
I don't even know how you'd make an Olympic Pokemon game. I'm sure there'd be a way to do it.
Have you ever... Okay, sidetrack. Have you ever watched, like, quote-unquote pro...
Like, league play with Pokemon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've watched some videos.
That shit is kind of crazy.
They take it seriously.
Yeah.
And there'll be strategies, and then, you know, basically they break the game.
Yeah.
And then they have to regulate around those.
Right.
And then, like, everybody has to run this Pokemon to counter that Pokemon.
Yeah.
It's
actually kind of crazy, because I think there's so many choices, you know, that people can just discover all these exploits and stuff, and just like anybody that grew up playing Pokemon and was just like, oh, I'm going to use Charmander all the time.
Right.
And then you watch these guys play and you're like, this is the same game?
Yeah.
This does not look like the same game.
Yeah. And they've had Pokemon that they've literally bred and trained for generations.
Right.
Like to breed in certain stats, like hundreds and hundreds of, honestly, thousands of hours just in getting to the team that you want.
Right.
To have the stats to be competitive.
So if you say this isn't a sport, like...
You know what? I want to see the FIA regulate Pokemon battles. It has enough complexity.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. Let's do it.
It's just like when they have to change the rules in F1 every year.
Yeah.
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 Bernie Ecclestone, look at Pokemon.
I would... love to see Bernie Eccleston watch a Pokemon battle.
Yeah.
Because he would just get angry, I feel like. Like, he'd just be like, what the fuck?
with whatever model he was married to at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That man is living the life.
I found a great article about him that said Bernie Ecclestone pays $1.9 billion to push off bribery allegations.
Yeah, that sounds like Bernie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know what's always crazy to me is the company that owns, which I can't think of the name right now, the company that like does the TV distribution rights to F1 is here in Denver.
Really?
Yeah. If you go south of the airport that was by the shop here.
Oh, Centennial?
Centennial Airport.
Yeah.
If you go south of there, there's this giant building that looks like, I always think it's like a Xavier's School for the Gifted. But it's right off E-470.
Yeah.
And that is, I want to call them Sky, but that's the people in Britain that do the broadcasting.
And it's funny because there's no F1 anywhere near here.
Right.
Yeah.
But that company that has that building is the one who controls all the TV distribution rights to F1, which means at some point, Bernie Ecclestone probably flew into the Centennial Airport.
Yeah. That's the, it's the fourth busiest Class D airport or in the country, I believe.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Like, basically, it's one of the busiest small airports in the country.
Huh. I did not know that.
Yeah.
That makes sense because there's shit coming in and out of there all the time.
Yeah, and they've got 5,000-foot runways, so, you know, a full-size jetliner can land there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like a regular small airport where you're limited in what you can put down. And I see regularly see it's a really cool jet. We're getting off topic here, but it's is the Cirrus Vision jet. It's a personal jet. It's a single-engined V-tail. With like a, I think it's a 1,000-mile range. It's but it's yeah, it's a little. It's like just a little sports car in the sky. I think it's got a four seats.
Okay,
but you know it's a it's a personal private single engine jet. Huh. It basically created its own market segment because nobody else was making those.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I was kind of into planes a little bit as a kid.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't remember anything like that.
Yeah, if you look this thing up, it is cool.
What's it called?
The Cirrus Vision Jet.
Cirrus?
C-I-R-R-U-S.
Okay, so it yeah, it looks like a little prop plane, but it's a jet.
Yeah, and you see how the jets, the engine's mounted back there almost in between the tail.
Yeah, that is crazy. It looks like somebody strapped a freaking jet to the back of a plane.
And Cirrus is really cool with their engineering like this. They basically build the BMWs of the sky.
I don't want that.
Well, they don't leak that much oil.
Oh, man. Check engine light.
But they have a they make prop planes, too. Really nice prop planes.
Okay.
That have built-in parachutes in the roof. So if you have a failure, you can pull a lever and the parachute will pop out and your whole plane will float down to the ground.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it looks like it's a six-seater?
Oh, it looks like it does seat six people.
Which is still really small.
Yeah, they'd be the people in those back seats are going to be cramped.
Yeah, I guess technically seven. It looks like you could technically do a third in the center there.
Six and a half.
Yeah, this is definitely like sports car seating for sure.
Yeah, and you could jump in this thing. It's got a really nice range for what it is because it's a small plane, but it's a jet, so it can move fast. So you can, you know, you can make it halfway across the country without stopping for fuel.
Yeah.
Which most prop planes this size, you know, they can't go that distance.
Get your license, get that plane, and we're flying all over the place.
Let's do it.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of, this is still off topic. We're going to be an airplane podcast for a brief second. You need to get yourself a Microsoft Flight Simulator set up, man.
Okay.
Have you seen the new Microsoft?
I haven't seen the new one. I've seen some of the older ones.
All right. After the podcast, I'll show you some of the new shit. It is crazy looking. And the cockpits people make for these things are like real fucking airplane cockpits.
Talk about sim rigs.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, those are the guys spending crazy money. I will be curious to see what wheel setup they use for these, for the Olympic series for Gran Turismo.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. So they are going to run a sim rig. It's going to be, it's not going to be a controller.
I would assume so.
Okay.
Because they, Gran Turismo does their, like ITGL, International Gran Turismo League series.
Okay.
And they have certain drivers and stuff that are like, you know, they're star athletes and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
But I'm pretty sure they take their own sim rigs around. I don't know what wheel setup they use in that, but I'm sure it's some crazy shit.
I'd be interested to know how those are regulated.
Yeah.
Because there's got to be a way, you know, to cheat around building sim rigs.
I don't know. I don't know. I think you just show up and drive. I think you use their simulators.
Okay, so you show up and sit down in theirs.
Yeah.
And that's cool, though. I mean, that makes sense why they chose this for the Olympic series, then.
Right.
Because there's already an international competition in place.
Yeah, exactly. They just pretty much said, hey, do you want to slap an Olympic name to it, pretty much.
Yeah.
But
I'd be like, why would we say no to that?
But I don't know. Part of me, you know, just in general, as a guy who grew up playing video games, is just excited to see Olympics trying to jump into esports a little bit.
Yeah, you know, try to make it more relevant for a younger generation.
Yeah. So, hey, who knows? Maybe you keep driving that sim rig and keep driving in Gran Turismo. You'd be in the Olympics.
You
someday.
Could be an Olympic athlete.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
That is cool.
All right. We got to wrap this up. So we're going to talk about our, well, not budget racing series this week, but our budget just cool car shit to go do series.
This thing looks like so much fun. And I love that they write, you can bring as many people as you can tolerate for 3 days.
Yeah. We are talking about the Rocky Mountain Rambler 500. So If you've been around the internet for a while, there's a thing called the Gambler 500. Those are guys up in Washington that started doing this thing. It's a, you know, off-road, kind of like endurance rally, I guess you would call it. Not like, okay, not rally race, but like the road rallies that people do.
Yeah.
That old people do. but they're doing it off-road in $500 cars. And they didn't come to Colorado. So this group in Colorado Springs, I actually had them on the podcast. If you go back, I think it was episode 7, I want to say.
Okay.
I talked to these guys. They started the Rocky Mountain Rambler 500. They're like, we want to do this too. It looks fun as shit.
Yeah.
Basically what it is they're going to make a point-to-point destination for you. Pretty much you have little checkpoints along the way that you have to hit. It is a, I don't know how long it is. I don't think it's 500 miles. That sounds way too much. But it's through the Rocky Mountains, and your car shouldn't cost more than $500.
Right.
There's no real rules here, because there's no real prizes either. So if you want to cheat, yeah, I mean, go ahead and cheat. But the point is to go buy a cheap car, go have an adventure with it, with that car and your friends.
Yeah.
Meet some new people. Get stuck, get unstuck, break things, fix things, and have a damn good time.
I mean, this sounds like an absolute blast. And to be honest, having a $500 car, building one that could do this, that's impressive. I mean, Lemons is impressive too, but winching your car up a mountain,
right?
You know, and it's a $500 car, including the cost of your winch.
Right.
that says quite a bit. I mean, that's impressive.
How cheap are... what do you call them? Harbor Freight winches at this point.
I think they're like $200 or $300.
Yeah, see, he can do that. So this said,
oh wow,
these pictures are from the first Rambler, which was a little more.
That's a Honda Civic.
Yeah, Honda Civic with some spray paint on it. You know, it's like these people. It's not about, in my opinion, it's not even about having a competent car. In my opinion, if you have the more incompetent the car you have, the better. Like, you want to show up in a thing that shouldn't be able to do this and then make it through. Like this Geo Metro we're looking at right now.
Oh,
with
man.
A Harbor Freight winch. we just talked about.
That's hilarious. I hope they made it.
Right? Or this fucking Windstar. And people paint them up. The whole thing is just about having fun and doing crazy shit. Like, what is even happening here? Those are just bolted to the hood. These are headers just bolted to the hood for no reason.
They're not coming out of the hood. They're just decorations.
Yeah. Just, we had these laying around.
We just wanted to confuse people. Oh, look at that. Ford Taurus station wagon.
Taurus wagon. I think they were talking about this. This is the Yellow Submarine. They were talking about this on the podcast. It has like a little periscope and shit.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep. I didn't see pictures of it before, but yeah. And the guys who run this event are super cool. They are just... You know, they just want to go and have fun. They're in the car industry like us. I think they work at a dealer, if I remember correctly. And this was from year one. They did one in 2018, 2019. They did one last year, but it was a little more low key. And this year they're going all out, it sounds like.
This thing would be fun. I'd like to build a car for this. Maybe not this year, but I'd like to do this at some point.
Yeah, I think at some point I was kind of thinking about
that's
this.
That's a Miata.
This is a Miata with a Joker paint job.
and the no smoking sign on the front.
Right.
Which I'm guessing is just wishful thinking.
There's a blow-up doll in that van behind it.
I noticed that you could come in matching costumes, too.
Right? It's encouraged.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, I get it. We talk about racing a lot on this podcast. But, you know... The car world is more than just racing.
Yeah.
It's about going out and having experiences and having fun and meeting people.
Yeah.
And you can do that racing, or you can do that just having fun doing something like this.
Well, and it's a camping trip, too.
It is, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. You go, you're spending $500 to go out camping and meet people and have an adventure.
Yeah.
That's the cheapest vacation I can think of.
Yeah. I mean, it costs more to fly somewhere.
Yeah. So, yeah, Rocky Mountain Rambler... This year, can we get back to the main site? I don't remember the time or what day they're doing it. September 17th through the 19th is when that's going on. You can just check out RockyMountainRambler500.com for a bunch more details on that. I'm going to definitely be going out to at least, they do like a car show.
Oh, that's cool.
The day before they head out.
Yeah.
I'm at least going down there to check out the cars and talk to people because...
You meet some interesting people.
Oh, you're going to meet some interesting people doing that.
I mean, honestly, it'd be cool even just to go to the campsite and camp.
Right?
Be like, all right, what broke today?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind just taking like a Jeep up there and like helping people out. You know?
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Like, oh, you got stuck? Let's get you out, you know?
Yeah, just be the support vehicle.
Yeah, exactly. But we have quite a bit of time still. So who knows? By September 17th, maybe we'll have a car ready for this.
We might be able to build one. That would be cool.
I almost want to buy something on September 16th. Just go to Craigslist, $500, September 16th, and show up the next day with whatever we buy.
Yeah, just whatever we buy, whatever minimal prep we could do.
Right, yeah.
In a day.
Exactly.
I think that would be fun. That would actually be a really cool YouTube segment.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, I have a feeling people are like, all right, I'm going to build my Rambler car, and I'm going to start now, and I'm going to put long travel suspension on, and I'm going to do this. Stop. you're missing the point.
Yeah. I think doing this in a K-truck would be a blast.
I think doing this in a K-truck would be impossible.
You have four-wheel drive with a winch, lift it.
It's also in the Rockies, though, and those things make, what, 70 horsepower on a good day?
Yeah, on a really good day.
Yeah, sea level?
Yeah.
So where am I getting, like, 30
in
the mountains? I mean, that's as much as, like, a four-wheeler.
Yeah, you might have to, you know, if you've got more than one person, you might have to have a few people get out.
Yeah, you get out, you walk beside it.
Yeah, it's okay. You'll be able to catch up.
Yeah, don't worry about it. But yeah, you can go to their website to find the full list of rules. There's not really much rules. Basically, just like make sure your things are semi-safe and legal.
I like that fire extinguishers are mandatory.
That is good because, hey, this is Colorado. We're in a drought still. Yes. And we don't want to have our cool car event cause the next wildfire.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm honestly worried about that with the electric cars on Pikes Peak.
Right. Yeah. Oh, God. If we burn down Pikes Peak, we're never going back.
Yeah, the environmentalists will never let us have that.
Nope. So, once again, Rocky Mountain Rambler 500. Heck, just go to the website and check out some of the past cars that have been on here. Because
some of these cars look pretty ridiculous. Yeah, this is cool.
People put some time into
making it. That's a lifted Lincoln Town car.
I don't even know if it's lifted. I think it's just on big tires. And then this Chevy pickup with like street tires on it. So, the Lincoln Town car probably did better. But... And I think we made it through the news finally.
All right.
Got project car updates?
Nope. I don't really have anything to add. Just did some donuts. Destroyed my hand cooks a little bit more.
Hey, you know, broke them in.
Yeah.
I was working on the sim rig a little bit more today. That one day or one weekend project has turned into a month and a half long project, as is normal. Like, you think I know this shit by now. But it's almost done. And I can't wait to get that thing here and actually start doing some sim racing.
That's going to be really fun. And yeah. I mean, I'm going to be honest. If we admitted to ourselves how long this stuff was actually going to take, it would be a lot harder to start.
That is a good point.
You know, if it's like, oh, I'll be done on Monday. It's like, this is not a big deal.
Right.
You know, 2 months later, so hopefully it'll be done next year.
Oh, the ballad of the car guy. So that's pretty much the only update I have. I haven't done anything to any of my cars. So, once again, viewer mail, you want to send something in? And once again, I forgot to check it before the show. I am a terrible host, but please don't stop sending things in if you are. If you want to give us some feedback, got any questions for us to ask, or want to give a shout out to the people and places in the car world that have made this stuff possible for you, send it in to contact@religionofspeed.com. And I think we're going to call this podcast, Chris.
Yep, let's do it.
All right. I want to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song. You can find all their music at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com. Give them some support and let them know Religion of Speed sent you. And until next time, peace out.